The French Revolution challenged the foundations of the entire social order and every political structure in Europe. In his new book, Phantom Terror, Political Paranoia and the Creation of the Modern State, 1789 to 1848, historian Adam Zamoyski explores the years after the French Revolution, when conservative governments from Britain to Russia created these forces to protect their powers against the threat of further rebellions, repressing and spying on their citizens. They police both speech and actions. Again, the name of the book is Phantom Terror. It is published by Basic Books, and we welcome Adam Zamoyski to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hello. It's very nice to hear from you.
Very nice to speak to you. What brought you to this subject of this particular time period?
Really, I just noticed in the correspondence of people and reading the memoirs of people of the time, this incredible fear. They were obsessed with the idea that somehow their world was threatened by something terrible, and that they were kind of sitting in their citadels, and that at any moment the whole thing might be overthrown. And the words which kept on coming up were conspiracy on the one hand, and the language was volcanic. It was, we're sitting on a volcano, or the earth is trembling under our feet, or sometimes they went into floods and torrents, but usually it was volcanic. Terrible sense of fear, and it was always ill-defined, and so I began researching it and trying to find out what it all came from. Why these people are in such a state about things.
And as you mentioned, fear. So it is coming from fear, but what was causing that, right?
Well, what was causing it was that there had been the French Revolution, and there had been revolutionary movements in other parts of the world. And the whole 18th century, which had preceded it, had questioned all the bases of established authority and institutions. And so people who were in any sense attached to the established order did feel under threat. Today we do feel, the whole Western world feels vaguely under threat from whether it's Islamic fundamentalism or something else. But the fact was that it was fantastically ill-defined, and as with all these things, is that when you know very little about the threat that you think is out there, it assumes huge proportions in your subconscious.
You write about this in the book, and I found it really interesting, of the response to the French Revolution outside of France, and how it was so polarizing to people, and it really depended of how you looked at the situation, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it was young progressive people thought, oh, this is marvelous, this is the beginning of a new dawn, without thinking very much further, whereas those on the side of the establishment and those hoping for a quiet life immediately saw it as probably the beginning of the end. And to try and draw parallels is always dangerous. But, when you think of not so very long ago, how most people in the Western world welcomed something called the Arab Spring. They thought, here's a wonderful change for the better. Things are going to get better. A new world is arising. Democracy is going to rule in all these countries. And then suddenly it all goes terribly, terribly wrong. And the same sort of process took place then.
You get into a very interesting discussion in the book about fear and how fear affects societies and how fear affects governments and ultimately how it breeds paranoia.
Yes. Well, we all suffer from a sort of primordial fear of what we don't understand. And the worst fear that we all feel from childhood onwards is the fear of that something lurking outside in the dark that we've never seen but we think is there, and we start whistling in the dark to ward it off. This is a powerful thing in people's subconscious. And the whole point about the French Revolution was that people didn't really understand, people on, let's say, on the right, conservatives. They didn't understand it, and as a result, they feared it all the more. And once the revolution had been crushed. They assumed it had just gone underground and that it was all just that there were people wandering around Europe in a kind of subterranean conspiracy plotting the downfall of everything. And, you know, once you start thinking along those lines, it's very, very easy to get quite paranoid. And governments are no exception, because governments are, of course, made up of people. But what is interesting in the case of the governments was that on the one hand, they did give in to fear and sometimes paranoia. And on the other hand, statesmen couldn't help noticing that actually it was actually quite useful. Because if the whole society was terrified and bleating to you to protect them, you could then take any measure you like and impose any changes to the constitution. You could impose press censorship because, you know, we're doing it to protect you, sort of thing, and extend police powers and so on. So governments found it strangely convenient, and what resulted was this curious interplay between genuine fear and paranoia on the one hand and frightful cynicism on the other hand, something which we noticed in the last decade in the West.
And as you pointed out, I mean, you have these seeds of fear in the population, and then often those in power will impose restrictions that ultimately lead to restrictions of freedom, which are said to protect the individuals from that supposed threat. And I'm curious as to of how thought out that is and how much of it is fear in the government itself and how much of it is really unadulterated evil.
Well, so that's the great question is that, and I think that's something that the politicians themselves, the statesmen, couldn't have answered, frankly, because they were themselves swayed between fear and between a certain opportunistic desire to exploit the fear for their own purposes. And, of course, the whole thing is that once you start imposing restrictions and giving extra powers to the police in order to protect society, it becomes a sort of self-perpetuating process. And if you give a policeman more weapons, it makes him both more paranoid and more aggressive. And, well, we've seen that with the behavior of the guardians of law and order in many cities in the Western world, even quite recently. Mm. Arming the police has this twin effect of making them both aggressive and fearful. And it's just one of the curious paradoxes. You know, this book is about a historical period, but it's actually about how human beings operate in almost any age and how illogical and irrational some of the reactions are.
Talk for a few minutes about the timeline that you use, 1789 to 1848, and we talked about the beginning and how this came to be. Why end in 1848, and then also talk a little bit about the measures enacted in 1815, the sort of the centerpiece of this period?
Yes, well, really, the period sort of defined itself in a way that, because obviously the first act is the French Revolution, which raises all sorts of terrible ghosts and skeletons. It opens the cupboard, if you like, and shows these skeletons rattling around. Then Napoleon manages to slam the door shut quite effectively and restores order. But most of the established rulers of Europe hated Napoleon because they saw him both as a sort of emanation, a spawn of the revolution, and somehow they couldn't somehow distinguish him from the revolution. So they didn't rest until they defeated him and imprisoned him on the island of St. Helena in the Atlantic in 1815 and rearranged Europe as they felt it should be rearranged. But it was only once they'd done that they suddenly got into a panic because they realized that he had actually been the policeman of Europe for the past 15 years and a very effective one. And suddenly they had to take over this role. And Well, generally, the governments and rulers of Europe were convinced that there was a general Europe-wide conspiracy to bring down the existing social order. They were pretty much convinced of this. Not all of them, and not in every country, but throughout most of Europe, that was what conservative society and the rulers thought. And whenever they saw any kind of disturbance, they'd immediately say, there you go, and clamp down on it. And the reason I chose 1848 as the finale was that 1848 goes down in history as the great year of revolution, right, because there were revolts all over Europe. But in fact, they were all utterly unrelated. They had nothing to do with the supposed conspiracies that the rulers thought were there. They had everything to do with the price of bread, with local discontents against all sorts of legislation, with nationalist dreams, with all sorts of things. And 1848 showed up that there never had been a grand conspiracy.
The name of the book is Phantom Terror, Political Paranoia and the Creation of the Modern State, 1789 to 1848. It is published by Basic Books. Adam Zamoyski, thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Phantom Terror, Political Paranoia and the Creation of the Modern State. It is published by Basic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.